Moving right along, I'll introduce our next speaker. It's Dr. Matthew Neal, who's going to be speaking about venous thromboembolism prevention. He's a trauma and critical care physician from the University of Pittsburgh.
Thanks very much. I appreciate the invitation to speak this morning about a critically important topic in patient safety, being VTE. These are my disclosures, none of which are relevant to the content of today's presentation. So why are we talking about VTE? Well, likely the audience needs no introduction as to the severity and the impact on our patients. This is an incredibly morbid condition associated with a high degree of in-hospital mortality, and largely something that's been driven with a decade's worth of emphasis emerging in part from a Surgeon General's initiative, but also multiple regulatory bodies having impacts both on patient safety, but also on reimbursement and quality measures. And so really has been an impetus over the course of the last decade for multiple regulatory organizations, including the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, which have identified DVT and PE as amongst the most common causes of preventable death in an inpatient setting, and DVT prophylaxis for these at-risk patients as being a number one safety strategy. So obviously a very critically important focus in patient safety. But I would pause for a moment just to point out that although this is critical, VTE is not a never event. I think this has been very well studied and really culminated in some meta-analyses and synthesis of randomized trials where optimal and strict adherence to VTE prophylaxis has demonstrated that these events still do occur. And so despite our best efforts, we lack a little bit of understanding of the biology of how to best prevent these. But nonetheless, these are common problems, and so we're forced to tackle this. So the question, one of the first questions that comes up is whether or not we should screen for this. And I would present to you that in high-risk patients, this is really clear as mud, as you can see from conflicting recommendations by two leading societies, in this case focusing on patients with major trauma, suggesting exactly the opposite, really, that there may be cost efficacy and decreased incidence and perhaps promoting screening, and others recognizing that screening is not an effective strategy. And so we're left to wonder what we should do, and I think one of the recognitions as we talk about this as a patient safety measure and as a quality measure is just the recognition that there is a subjective surveillance bias with VTE. And as you can see, the more you look, the more that you will find. And this has been well characterized by Bill Amore and colleagues in a nice paper in JAMA, really delineating the fact that both for PE and DVT, the more we look, the more we find, but this does not have a direct association on quality outcomes. And so I think this is critically important in our discussions about this as a prevention strategy, is recognizing the role of surveillance bias in VTE. But once we know and understand the severity of this problem and the fact that we need to focus on this as a patient safety measure, the question emerges, what do we do? And unfortunately, in an 8-minute talk to delve into the science behind all of these VTE prevention mechanisms is not possible. But what I point out is that there are a number of high-quality recommendations from expert panels, and that there's a high degree of overlap. I've already shown you that there is some discordance in those, and that's important to recognize. But the evidence is there, and we need to use the evidence. But unfortunately, that standard practice is not universal. And what we can see in large multinational studies, and here in one, the ENDORSE study, looking at over 68,000 patients, when you look at the surgical subset of those patients with what was defined as a best practice in prophylaxis, really less than 60% compliance with those guidelines. So despite the fact that we have hard, albeit perhaps incomplete evidence in multiple society recommendations, we generally are not doing as good of a job, perhaps, as we should in compliance with those. And so this is a figure that's taken from the AHRQ, which has an excellent resource website that I would direct all of you to for further information about this. But what this does is delineates the major points of failures in the workflow of a patient from admission to discharge in areas in which we sort of fall short in our mechanisms of VTE prevention. And so what we want to take the remaining time to do is sort of highlight some of the areas that we can make progress and perhaps even take back to your center for improvements for these breaks in workflow. And so I'm briefly going to talk about these four areas being risk stratification, improvement of implementation and reduction of missed doses of VTE prophylaxis, some low-hanging fruit, which is the elimination of IVC filters for prophylactic measures, and then at least one slide on new potential strategies for VTE prophylaxis. So it is important to recognize that in addition to the data that guide best practice, risk assessment is really key, and there are a number of risk assessment models that exist in the literature. Some of these are weighted on individual patient factors and have been extensively validated in other populations. Great initiatives from the VA and from the American College of Surgeons and NISQIP provide us metrics for guiding risk-based assessment. In addition to these models, there are condition-specific models, and so I encourage you as you go back to your practices to look to see if there are individual models of risk assessment that exist, and here are a few examples from the hernia literature, trauma literature, and OBGYN, where independent risk assessment models have been created. But I would submit to you, though, that although this is a tremendous opportunity for initiation for prophylaxis, that there are inherent flaws with a number of these. One, as I've already indicated, is insufficient utilization, right? So if we're not using the evidence, perhaps one of the reasons we're not using the evidence is because we're not utilizing the appropriate risk assessment tool. These interpretations are difficult in unvalidated populations, and so trying to use these risk assessments across the heterogeneous patient population is a tremendous challenge and an opportunity for further resource. I would also submit to you that I think that perhaps one of the major limitations in virtually every single one of these risk assessment tools is the lack of recognition that the patient's risk changes over time, that the risk upon presentation to the hospital is not as the same as the post-op day one, three, or at discharge. And so understanding how that dynamic changes and the need for extended prophylaxis is a current limitation in these risk assessment tools and an opportunity for future research. I want to show you a couple of examples, though, of how this can work. This is information kindly provided by Elliot Hott, who's really a champion of VTE prevention out of Johns Hopkins, and the initiation of a multidisciplinary VTE prevention collaboration at Hopkins, which focused on utilizing mandatory computerized provider order entry system for the implementation of clinical decision support for VTE prophylaxis. And what this resulted in was utilizing their EHR with mandatory choices from each section to really guide a risk-assessed clinical profile. And not surprisingly, what they saw was that improving prophylaxis changed outcomes. And as their rates of prophylaxis increased, aligned with the implementation of a computer order entry system, they saw increased compliance and decreases in VTE rates and improvement in preventable harm. One of the major contributing factors to this is a reduction in missed doses, and this has been well studied. There are a number of barriers, which, again, we don't have time to go into about why missed doses occur, but what the literature suggests to us is that when doses of VTE prophylaxis are missed, it is associated with VTE events. And as that reduction in missed doses further decrease, we can significantly decrease the rate of VTEs. And so we have implemented this as part of our trauma pathway at UPMC, and through relatively complex algorithms that are organized into the EHR into a computer orderized entry system, we can risk stratify our trauma patients and provide guidance for nursing staff for VTE implementation. And what we've seen as a result of implementing this into our EHR is a dramatic reduction in missed doses. And And so in the first year of implementation, over a 70% reduction in missed VTE prophylaxis, which was associated with taking an already low rate of VTE even lower, with an almost 27% reduction in VTE events in major trauma patients. And this has been a sustainable event for us, largely linked to the implementation of an EHR-guided risk assessment pathway to guide implementation of VTE prophylaxis. And importantly, I would point out that this is safe because in parallel, we have measured our rates of bleeding events and seen no significantly increased rate of bleeding events reported with the utilization of this pathway. I'll close with a couple of things that I think, again, are low-hanging fruit. We wish didn't have to have this ongoing discussion about the use of IVC filters for prophylaxis, but I would submit to you that this is still overutilized. And when you look at relatively recent studies using the national inpatient sample, although the recommendation for IVC filter use is for an absolute contraindication to anticoagulation, as many as 65% of the filters were placed for relative indications or prophylaxis in general. This has been well studied from retrospective analyses showing that there is no survival advantage in multiple populations, but is the subject of an ongoing randomized trial, specifically in trauma. Again, the recommendation really where IVC filters play a role is in patients with acute DVT or PE, meaning within a short period of weeks, that meet this absolute contraindication to prophylaxis. But again, I would submit to you not to be provocative, but that in my institution, I respectfully challenge almost every declaration of absolute. And one of our problems is how heterogeneous the interpretation of absolute contraindication is to anticoagulation. But this is an area where there is agreement from the American College of Chest Physicians that in surgical patients and in high-risk trauma patients that IVC filters are not part of our prophylaxis strategy. The final thing I'll call your attention is that there is an ever-moving target with what we should use for prophylaxis, and just at this meeting presented a couple of days ago was a propensity match analysis in high-risk trauma patients using direct oral anticoagulants as a mechanism of prophylaxis that is published online in the Journal of the American College of Surgeons, as well as an abundance of literature that is emerging in the orthopedic population about the use of DOACs. Again, I would submit that although this is studied in a medical population, we need surgical-specific trials and an understanding of a role in extended prophylaxis, but I think this is something that's coming down the pipeline. So I would close by reiterating that this is a critical patient safety measure, but should not be considered a never event. Nonetheless, we don't do as well as we should. There are guidelines. Please read the guidelines. And when you know the guidelines, we need to understand how to risk assess and how to implement and how to utilize our EHR as a tool, which has been shown in multiple settings now as being an effective means of VTE prevention by largely a reduction in missed doses and implementation of best practices. Please, if you are still using them, stop prophylactically placing IVC filters and recognize that there is a changing paradigm on the horizon. Thanks.